I'm going to move ahead with the next presentation, which is by Dr. Cameron Peace. And he has more than 15 years of experience in tree fruit genetics and presently employed at the Washington State University as associate professor. And he supervises WSU's tree fruit genetic program that provides fruit breeding program with a ready access to DNA-based information on their plant material. He works very closely with WSU's world-class apple and sweet cherry breeding programs, and he is currently also the interim breeder for the Pacific Northwest sweet cherry breeding program, and he is also a co-director of the Rosebreed project. And I can go on, but I would like to welcome Dr. Cameron Peace.
Thank you, CG. Thanks for being on time. You're giving me some extra time for questions at the end. Okay, so this talk I'll be giving here is also part of the Rosebreed project. So I'm just getting something ready here. Okay. So what you see is what you can improve: breeding utility of genome-wide haplotype mosaics. So the Rosebreed project supports breeding programs of rosaceous crops with modern genomics tools. And you know what we realize is that locus-specific information, so Mendelian trait locus-based performance predictions or fingerprinting with small marker sets, and then even getting into multi-QTL-based performance predictions is helpful, very helpful in breeding programs, but it is not yet at the level that we need to be to fully integrate DNA information into breeding programs. So the Rosebreed project, one of the central premises is that we must expand from locus-specific considerations to genome-wide. So in the talk here, I'll explain how we're not in the shallow end anymore, in the kiddie pool there. We've dived into the deep end and we're swimming. So fruit breeding is experiential. Okay, as a fruit breeding session here, most of you guys are heavily involved in fruit breeding. As you know, it's very experiential. So it relies heavily on phenotyping, and phenotyping is sensory. And even the data itself usually invokes sensory memory. So when Sujit was showing SSC values earlier of 6, 7, 8, you know, that's just not an abstract number. That sounds very, you know, low, not very sweet at all. But it gives us these feelings. Okay, so to complement phenotypic data, molecular geneticists offer DNA-based genotypic data. And it looks something like this. Right, it's different to what breeding does. It's not particularly sensory there. So what's missing in genotype is the experience by the breeder. How about something like this, though? And what I'm showing here is what we're calling haplotype mosaics. So we've got the ancestry of this individual, selection X, in the background there in the various colors, and then superimposed, that's the background, and in the foreground we have the trait loci, or the jewels. And so we can show desirable, undesirable, neutral alleles, and then other aspects as well, even if they're not positive or negative, but just interesting. Okay, so this is what I'll be talking about now. So what have we got here? Well, what I showed before was an 8-chromosome situation. It's sweet cherry, and I'll go into it in a bit more in a lot of examples. But then a chromosome, such as chromosome 8 that's shown here, is made up of strings of alleles of whatever markers. Here it's a whole lot of SNPs. SNPs work really well for the resolution that we need. And then we have SNP alleles. So the vertical lines here in the vertical sections are haploblocks. Okay, so these are discrete segments that are co-inherited over generations, and we define them as a recombination that's happened during selection. So this is for cultivars and their ancestors. And the boundaries, therefore, are where recombination has happened. So anything within a haploblock is in 100% linkage disequilibrium. So then the variants within these haploblocks or segments are haplotypes. So these are co-inherited strings of alleles that are co-inherit that same set in certain lineages, and we can track them through any pedigree. So any diploid individual carries two, one per parent. Obviously, if it's an octoploid, then it's going to have eight of them. And if both are the same, then that means they're homozygous, and that means that very likely the parents had a common ancestor. So some of the ones, for example, where it's blue over here, if I can get over there, so these would be a homozygous section, for example. Okay, so these two things, haplotypes, haplobloxes, they reveal some very key information. So they reveal allelic variation and recombination patterns. And then we can visualize these, track these over generations. And so these three vectors here, basically, these three bits of information are the key genetics information and moves us way beyond just allelic variation, which all the marker systems and approaches we've had in the past do. So how do we get this sort of information? Well, we need large germplasm sets that are pedigree connected. We need markers that are genome spanning and at high enough density that we can detect all the recombination events. And SNP arrays are quite efficient for this, such as the 8K, 6K, and 9K SNP arrays that we have in apple, cherry, and peach. And there are lots of curation of genotypic data is required after you get the data back from the genome scanning itself. So that's a whole lot of inheritance checking and phasing. And I've put up photos of the three postdocs. We've done an excellent work here doing this. Sten van der Zander, Lee Chin Kai, and as a student, the last one, Nick Howard at University of Minnesota. And these three guys are all also co-authors of the paper here, the talk I'm giving. And then QTL research and other sorts of genetics research to assign phenotypic effects to haplotypes of some of the haplobloxes and the ancestry information, ancestry analyses, all that sort of thing as well. Assign meaning, and for me that means colours, to the various parts of the genome. So when we have this information, these genome-wide haplotype mosaics can be used to reveal things such as this, and these are examples I'll be showing over the following slides. So qualitative genetic relationships, not just quantitative, connections of alleles with selection processes, genetic virtues and deficiencies of individuals, and potential contributions that parents, for example, will have to the next generation. So here's an example in Sweet Cherry, which we published earlier this year, about pedigree connections. We've made many new pedigree connections, and Sujit was mentioning some of this sort of thing in Strawberry before as well. Now that we have this genome-wide information, we can lock in what's related to what with a parent-child relationship. So for the popular cultivar Sweetheart, we determined, and it was very helpful with the haplobloc information here, these haplotype mosaics, that the parents are, the father is Lappens. It's not Van Cross Neustar, it's Van Cross Lappens. And this is what's showing here is a haplotype mosaics for chromosome 2 only, not the whole genome, but chromosome 2. Here is an example in apple, another paper that we published earlier this year, and this is the haplotype mosaic across the whole genome for Honeycrisp. And this was used to determine the father, which was previously unknown otherwise, of what Honeycrisp is. And it's a selection that no longer exists, probably doesn't exist anymore, MN1627. And its parents are Duchess of Oldenburg and Golden Delicious. So the haplotype mosaic of this, the ancestral one here, shows the various patterns of all of those grandparents, plus the known side that we had. As I said, this was published earlier this year. So those last two slides I showed are two ways of visualizing the haplotype mosaics. There's another possible way. There's various other ways too that we're discussing. But this is one that I'll continue to use for the rest of the talk here. And I was showing earlier as well. So we've got the cherry genome, and this is all breeding relevant. This is all in semimorgans, not megabases, because breeders don't care about megabases. And each section here is a chromosome. So then we'll just have a split between the two. It's useful to have them appended here. The top one is always from the mother, if known, and the bottom one from the father. But in any cases, these are diploid individuals, cherry and apple, and so we've got two homologs for every chromosome. So we can visualize, and we've found out that there's many extended shared haplotypes. So cherry cultivars, for example, share much of their genomes. And they share these in large segments, and it's equivalent for apple as well. I could put up a slide that showed the same thing for apple. So take, for example, these three mainstays of the Washington and therefore U.S. Cherry industry. Got the early, mid, and late season major cultivars. So what's shown in green here are the parts of the Bing genome that are shared, and these are at least 10 centimorgan segments here, that are shared with Chelan and Sweetheart. Okay, and then Bing shares 100% with itself. Okay, so why do they share these large chunks? Well, it's because they have recent common ancestors. Okay, that's already an obvious thing. So shown in brown here are the common ancestors that those three cultivars have. And so Chelan shares some chunks shown in brown there that Bing also has, and Sweetheart shares some. There's still a bunch of green there that's showing. So there's even more that is not from these known ancestors. Okay, so where does that come from? Well, it must be because all of these founders, we don't know the parents of all these things around the outside here, they must also have recent common ancestors for this to happen in these large chunks like this. And sure enough, they do. Here's Napoleon compared to those other founders, or I could put any of the other ones up in the middle there. And shown here are all the chunks of at least 10 centimorgans that founder has with all of these other ones. And in fact, it's so much. These are the proportions of the genome made up by these large chunks, not individual SNP alleles, but these extended shared haplotypes, which really puts all of these founders at the level of being full SIDS to first cousins. So now we can track the actual genomic regions that determine relatedness. And this, as I was saying, is qualitative. This is beyond quantitative. Now the way we can track these through is, an example is tracking introgress segments. So here is the classic situation, the pedigree of Malus floribunda that was brought in for scab resistance about 60 or so years ago, crossed, and then multiple generations leading to various cultivars. Enterprise is one of those cultivars that came out. And so I've tracked through the pedigree here, and in green are those intermediate ancestors that carry floribunda in them. Okay, so we can now track these floribunda segments. So, and it's come through as is shown in green in here. So floribunda itself is 100% floribunda, and it has the VF allele for scab resistance, so that's why it was used. Okay, the F1 individual, it's in brackets there because we don't have that individual in existence anymore, but we know it was 50% exactly, and that's the top line there. Half of its genome had to be floribunda. Okay, so the expectations for the subsequent generations are shown down here, so it's basically halving it every generation. It doesn't halve right at the end there because Enterprise is a cross between two individuals that both had 3.1%. And here are the actual segments that have been inherited. So they were all selected for scab resistance, so they all have a piece which is typically increasingly getting smaller here, this segment that carries the VF allele, but we can track all these other segments in here as well. Okay, and the repercussions now of being able to do this, this is, you know, we didn't have a way of tracking this before, this is just what happens, but now we can track these things in actual mark-resistant introgression efforts in breeding programs. We can also visualize unusual regions in the genome. I've got some examples here for cherry. So take, for example, on the left, we've got ancestors of original US cherry breeding germplasm, and then new material has been brought in, especially by Amy Iazzoni, for the Washington State University program on the right there, and the idea was to bring in more diversity, as breeders do. Okay, so we can see, have these individuals on the right brought in new diversity? And I'll just show three of these coming up. So Regina is one of them. This has, shown here in blue, are the haplotypes that Regina has. It's a new parent that's not present in any other parent, including any of the other diversity that's come in. And so it's got 10% uniqueness of haplotypes. And one of those has brought in a large fruit size allele, so that's a valuable one as well. Okay, so many small unique haplotypes is what you see here, and then one a unique jewel has come in as well. Here's another one, Christobalina. It's got about double as much uniqueness to it. These are in larger segments than Regina's, and it's also brought jewels, and then some bad ones too, some rocks, right? Some bad alleles too, small fruit alleles. And one more example I'll show on this is the mildew immune mazard, some wild cherries. And these, the diversity that's brought in here, the uniqueness is in very large segments. And these are jewels and rocks have come in. So new alleles have been obtained for some genomic regions, and that's worked, what was done there in the breeding program, and we can visualize these and where they are. We can look for overrepresented haplotypes. So shown here in yellow are haplotypes that are too frequent than what we'd expect for their haploblock size. One of these we know, and we published on this earlier this year, it's a fruit size allele, so we expect that. It's fair enough that's quite common. But what about all these other ones? So they're worth looking into to find out what's going on with those. It may well be signatures of selection, just like the large fruit size allele is. Okay, so this is the same information there. We can look at loci that are highly homozygous and loci that are highly heterozygous and also figure out what's going on here. These are all also signatures of selection. So interesting things going on here. So we want to look further at these regions and perhaps even purposely target them in breeding, even if we don't know why they exist so commonly. And then finally, we can look at duals in the genomes. And so here are 9 actual Mendelian trait loci, or QTLs, that we have in the sweet cherry genome. And so any given individual, we can see what alleles it has. For example, the classic Washington bred cultivar Rainier. And so showing for a bunch of things, it's not resistant and it's not cracking resistant here and for mildew. So it's got 2 red alleles. And it has 1 good fruit size allele and then 1 bad one, and it's neutral for a bunch of others. And then here it's blush, and so it's got 2 yellow recessive alleles there at that particular locus. And then underlying that, can put on the ancestry, and so it's 3 ancestors that are known, coloured up here. We can therefore track back quite readily, or that any breeder, anyone looking at this, can see where those alleles have come from. You can also look at things, all sorts of stuff like the homozygosity. So these are homozygous stretches in the Rainier genome that are greater than 5 centimorgans. So having this information, therefore, allows breeders to be able to see what they have and plan what they want to have and then devise ways of moving forward to achieve what they do have. What they want to get. So we've got a way of doing this now where the breeder can experience the holistic whole genotype, the genotype of their material, and use that in decisions. So haplotype mosaics is one way then that we're going genome-wide in the Rosebreed project and for fruit breeding. Another way is genome-wide predictions of breeding value and performance. The genome-wide predictions is a quantitative way. The haplotype mosaics is a qualitative way. Bringing these things together, I think, really is the way we can really synthesize germplasm, genomics, genetics, and superior new cultivars. So, yep, many institutions, which we thank, that are involved in the Rosebreed project, and including the industry folks and the funding from SCRI. And I'll take questions if we have a minute or two left.